It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.rir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. This week we present a special report correcting the distorted views of the National Public Radio series Unfit for Work, The Startling Rise of Disability in America, which painted a misleading and inaccurate picture of the Social Security disability programs that serve as a vital lifeline for millions of Americans with severe disabilities. And during this week's News You Can Use, we report that hospital prices no longer are secret, as new data reveals a bewildering system and staggering cost differences. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 204, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.rir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. On May 7, 2013, the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services laid out for the first time and in massive detail what the vast majority of American hospitals charge for the 100 most common inpatient procedures billed to Medicare. The new database reveals the perplexing assortment of prices for medical care, with the details of bills seemingly untethered to any graspable principle. Even within the same metropolitan area, hospitals charge prices that differ by staggering degrees for the same procedures. People without health insurance pay vastly higher costs for care when less expensive options are often available nearby. Virtually everyone who seeks health care winds up paying inflated prices in one form or another, as these stark disparities in price sow inefficiencies throughout the market. Until now, hospitals have protected their price lists, documents known as charge masters, as closely guarded secrets. Their prices are secret no more. The database, which covers claims filed within fiscal year 2011, spans 163,000 individual charges recorded at 3,300 hospitals located in 306 metropolitan areas. These price differences impose a uniquely punishing burden on the estimated 49 million Americans who have no health insurance. They are the only ones who see on their bill the dollar amounts listed on these official price lists. Yet these same prices effectively shape what nearly everyone pays for health care, because they determine how much private health insurance companies must surrender in reimbursement for services. That in turn influences the size of the premiums that insurance companies charge their customers. The new Medicare database is filled with examples of inexplicably high prices and wide variations between hospitals in the same geographic area. For example, for simple pneumonia and pleurisy, Inova Alexandria charges $13,301. Inova Fairfax, the same hospital system less than 10 miles away, charges only $11,660. And just up the road, Virginia Hospital charges $10,326. If you thought things were cheaper outside of Northern Virginia, you're wrong. Mary Washington Hospital charges a whopping $23,226 for the same procedure in Fredericksburg. Public access to this data on hospital charges pulls back the curtain on one of the most troubling aspects of the American healthcare system, Medical providers set their prices in ways that seem arbitrary, with little oversight and practically no market incentive to reduce them, because almost no one actually pays the official rates. The full database is available at www.cms.gov. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. In late March 2013, National Public Radio broadcast a week-long series, Unfit for Work, The Startling Rise of Disability in America, which painted a misleading and inaccurate picture of the Social Security disability programs that serve as a vital lifeline for millions of Americans with severe disabilities. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright, and this is a special report on National Public Radio and disability. Who pays for public radio? And what ethics govern an age of venture philanthropy? As posted last month on the Daily Kos by attorney Jennifer Cates, a legislative aide in the Philadelphia City Council's office, in the weeks since its flawed series on America's disability benefit programs, National Public Radio, or NPR, has been silent in the face of a huge flood of criticism, complaint, dismay, and outrage from diverse and respected sources. Meanwhile, new information has emerged to show that reporter Hanna Yoffe-Walt's sourcing was even more dramatically slanted, and NPR's apparent ethical breaches even more severe than anyone initially realized. With no official response from This American Life's Ira Glass, the hosts of All Things Considered, or the various ombudsmen of National Public Radio, Public Radio International, or the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Yoffe-Walt has continued to essentially whitewash her series' errors and distortions, and she and her editors have yet to answer a single substantive criticism of what she aired. Yoffe-Walt recently posted a cherry-picked online summary of responses to her reporting, a selection which recycles many of her own sources, who, naturally, agree with themselves. But that's hard to tell from her write-up, which does not identify these sources' relationships, obscuring their far-right, pro-austerity affiliations, and making them appear less marginal than they are. This is the same trick she performed in the original series, leaving most listeners unaware they were listening to repackaged talking points from think tanks with radical proposals to restructure the country's disability benefits program. But those same think tanks are much less silent about their role in this mess. Like, for example, Richard Birkhauser, who Yoffe-Walt never mentions as a source, although she does cite his writing partner, Mary Daly, mentioning her authoritative-sounding connection to the Federal Reserve, but not her link with the much more ideological American Enterprise Institute, or AEI. Birkhauser happily trumpeted his central role in the NPR series at an American Enterprise Institute-sponsored forum in April 2013, saying that Yoffe-Walt's reporting was a, quote, point-of-view piece, not a neutral one, and crowing, hallelujah, and thank God for NPR. According to someone in attendance, over lunch at the forum, Birkhauser went further and claimed that NPR's series actually originated when Yoffe-Walt called him up, saying she wanted to base it on his book, The Declining Work and Welfare of People with Disabilities, published by none other than the American Enterprise Institute. The book pushes fundamental changes in the way disability is insured and managed. The forum was titled Disability Insurance, Inherent Problems, Practical Solutions, and Action for Reform. Inherent Problems? This is a source, like its publisher, AEI, with a definite agenda, one that is highly contested. In fact, it's more than contested. It's a fringe view that lacks mainstream credibility. At the same forum, the current chief actuary of the Social Security Administration, Stephen Goss, opened his presentation by denouncing Birkhauser's very premises as fundamentally and obviously wrong. These are also the flawed premises of Yoffe-Walt's reporting. Not only did she seemingly fail to do something as basic as discuss her story with officials at the Social Security Administration, perhaps the chief actuary to start, or a single disability advocate, she got all her facts from the same incestuous group of right-wing academics, and she took pains to hide that from listeners. Meanwhile, it's now clear that Planet Money, Joffe Walt's program, has a new exclusive sponsor, Lincoln Financial Group. Among the things that Lincoln Financial sells, disability insurance. You know, the same private disability insurance that Joffe Walt's main sources advocate using to replace publicly administered Social Security disability. Literally, the same. It even happens to be Lincoln Financial who provides disability insurance for employees of the American Enterprise Institute. Now, disability insurance is just a small part of Lincoln Financial's business, but they have a direct financial stake in the series subject, and their funding should have been disclosed to listeners. Lincoln Financial is part of the Council for Disability Awareness, a business front group pushing to increase the profile of private disability insurance. Lincoln Financial sponsorship began on March 18, 2013, 4 days before the series aired, and is only committed through June 16. Is this conspiracy thinking? An odd coincidence? Listeners should not have to play guessing games or play private detective, as NPR's ethics rules make clear, at least on paper. The problem is that there's no way to know whether Lincoln Financial's sponsorship came with any strings, or if there were other underwriters, such as foundations or think tanks, who may have had input into sourcing or framing. No disclosures played on air, and despite direct requests, NPR has failed to disclose the funding for the series or its research. Did anyone help pay for that trip to Hale County, Alabama? A six-month story could have had some underwriting or grants behind it, right? The audience has no way to know without transparency. These are not academic questions or minor ones. They implicate core journalistic ethics, and they extend beyond the disability series. Private foundations are paying for more of our journalism, and they are not detached bestowers of charity. They describe their giving as venture philanthropy, a version of venture capitalism, wherein an investment is meant to bring about particular returns, often economic. This all raises a new set of ethical problems for journalists. As muckraking investigative reporter Yasha Levine wrote in an essay titled, A2 NPR? Let's go through that again. Here we have an NPR program in which everything, the host, the interviewee, and the subject being discussed are all funded by the same pro-privatization outfits. And disclosures? Not a single one. These apparent or real conflicts and breaches need to be redressed. Urgently. Many people donate to public radio and listen daily. But for some of those people, their trust in the institution of national public radio has been totally shaken. For it to return, we need these questions answered, stock to be taken of what went wrong, and the record to be finally and fully corrected. Otherwise, that series NPR ran isn't journalism. It's just propaganda for those who've been trying for years to slash benefits that disabled people and disabled poor kids depend on for their lives. The NPR series is only one of several recent dramatic, sensationalized media reports about the Social Security Disability Insurance and Supplemental Security Income programs, based on anecdotes, half-truths, and misrepresentation of facts. In response, the National Organization of Social Security Claimants Representatives, or NOSCRA, released a press release to set the record straight about the program, which serves as a vital resource for millions of Americans. The truth about the increase in disability rolls is that this was an expected trend, predicted as far back as 1994, with two very clear factors: the aging baby boomers entering their high disability years, and women who entered the workforce in the 1970s and 1980s, and who now are eligible to draw on their own earnings record when they become disabled. According to Nancy Shore, founder and executive director of NOSCRA, quote, The mistruths and recent media barrage is unwarranted and shocking. We're very concerned that they do not tell the entire story and that they will be harmful to the millions of Americans that depend on these modest benefits to maintain a basic quality of life. Yearly benefits are only around $13,000 per year, just enough to keep beneficiaries out of deep poverty and homelessness. According to Deborah Schifrin, disability attorney and president of NOSCRA, quote, "There are more than 38 million disabled Americans, but only the most seriously disabled, or around 14 million, have proved eligible to receive benefits, which they depend on greatly. When comprehending the Social Security disability system, people need to understand that less than one-third of initial applications are approved, and only 40% overall, as it requires evaluations and documentation to establish that these claimants are truly in great need. As a member organization made up of attorneys and other advocates who represent people with disabilities, NOSCRA is very concerned with the gross mischaracterization of representatives in recent stories. It is important to keep in mind that claimants who hire private attorneys do so voluntarily. Claimants' representatives' highly regulated fees are taken on a contingency basis and are capped at 25% of the claimant's past due benefits, or $6,000, whichever is lower. Additionally, the federal court appeals process is so time-consuming and complex that few lawyers want to handle these cases at all. Attorneys that do this work are deeply committed to public service and are motivated to discourage frivolous claims that could overload an already burdened system." Also in response, eight former commissioners of the Social Security Administration, both Republican and Democrat, released an open letter saying, "As former commissioners of the Social Security Administration, SSA, we write to express our significant concerns regarding a series recently aired on This American Life, All Things Considered, and national public radio stations across the U.S., Unfit for Work, The Startling Rise of Disability in America. Our nation's Social Security system serves as a vital lifeline for millions of individuals with severe disabilities. We feel compelled to share our unique insight into the Social Security system because we know firsthand the dangers of mischaracterizing the disability programs via sensational, anecdote-based media accounts, leaving vulnerable beneficiaries to pick up the pieces. Approximately 1 in 5 of our fellow Americans live with disabilities, but only those with the most significant disabilities qualify for disability benefits under Title II and Title 16 of the Social Security Act. Title II, Old Age, Survivors, and Disability Insurance Benefits, and Title 16, Supplemental Security Income Benefits, provide critical support to millions of Americans with the most severe disabilities, as well as their dependents and survivors. Disabled beneficiaries often report multiple impairments, and many have such poor health that they are terminally ill. About 1 in 5 male beneficiaries and 1 in 7 female beneficiaries die within 5 years of receiving benefits. Despite their impairments, many beneficiaries attempt work using the work incentives under the Social Security Act, and some do work part-time. For example, research by Mathematica and SSA finds that about 17% of beneficiaries worked in 2007. However, their earnings are generally very low. 2/3 of those who worked in 2007 earned less than $5,000 for the whole year. And only a small share are able to earn enough to be self-sufficient and leave the disability insurance and SSI programs each year. Without Social Security or SSI, the alternatives for many beneficiaries are simply unthinkable. The statutory standard for approval is very strict, and was made even more so in 1996. To implement this strict standard, Social Security Administration regulations, policies, and procedures require extensive documentation and medical evidence at all levels of the application process. Less than 1/3 of initial applications are approved, and only about 40% of adult applicants receive benefits, even after all levels of appeal. As with adults, most children who apply are denied SSI, and only the most severely impaired qualify for benefits. Managing the eligibility process for the disability system is a challenging task, and errors will always occur in any system of this size. But the SSA makes every effort to pay benefits to the right person, in the right amount, at the right time. When an individual applies for one of SSA's disability programs, the agency has extensive systems in place to ensure accurate decisions, and the agency is home to many dedicated public servants who take their ongoing responsibility of the proper stewardship of the programs very seriously. Program integrity is critically important, and adequate funds must be available to make continued progress in quality assurance and monitoring. In the face of annual appropriations that were far below what the President requested in fiscal year 2011 and fiscal year 2012, the agency still has continued to implement many new system improvements that protect taxpayers and live up to Americans' commitment to protect the most vulnerable in our society. It's true that disability insurance has grown significantly in the past 30 years. The growth that we've seen was predicted by actuaries as early as 1994 and is mostly the result of two factors: baby boomers entering their high disability years and women entering the workforce in large numbers in the 1970s and 1980s, so that more are now insured for disability insurance based on their own prior contributions. The increase in the number of children receiving SSI benefits in the past decade is similarly explained by larger economic factors, namely the increase in the number of poor and low-income children. More than 1 in 5 U.S. children live in poverty today, and some 44% live in low-income households. Since SSI is a means-tested program, more poor and low-income children mean more children with disabilities are financially eligible for benefits. Importantly, the share of low-income children who receive SSI benefits has remained constant at less than 4%. Yet, the series aired on NPR sensationalizes this growth, as well as the Disability Insurance Trust Fund's projected shortfall. History tells a less dramatic story. Since Social Security was enacted, Congress has reallocated payroll tax revenues across the Retirement Trust Fund and the Disability Insurance Trust Fund, about equally in both directions, some 11 times to account for demographic shifts. In 1994, the last time such reallocation occurred, SSA actuaries projected that similar action would next be required in 2016. They were right on target. We are deeply concerned that the series Unfit for Work failed to tell the whole story and perpetuated dangerous myths about the Social Security disability programs and the people helped by this vital system. We fear that listeners may come away with an incorrect impression of the program, as opposed to an understanding of the program actually based on facts. As former commissioners of the agency, we could not sit on the sidelines and witness this one perspective on the disability programs threaten to pull the rug out from under millions of people with severe disabilities. Drastic changes to these programs would lead to drastic consequences for some of America's most vulnerable people. With the lives of so many vulnerable people at stake, it is vital that future reporting on the disability insurance and SSI programs look at all parts of this important issue and take a balanced, careful look at how to preserve and strengthen these vital parts of our nation's Social Security system. That was the statement of 8 former commissioners of the Social Security Administration, both Republican and Democrat. Simply put, Social Security and SSI disability benefits do not contribute to the deficit. Social Security is self-financed by payroll taxes, and SSI dollars come out of taxes raised and therefore not increasing the national debt. Achieving long-term solvency for Social Security programs should not be part of deficit reduction efforts. The Social Security Disability Insurance Program is an essential component of our American government system, intended to be a social safety net for American workers unable to perform job functions and support their families. These attacks are so blatantly one-sided, untrue, and threaten the modest benefits that are needed by so many. The media is encouraged to focus on solutions to reform the system to ensure it is strong and efficient for many years to come, rather than disparaging our nation's most vulnerable population. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Marty Wegbright. Thank you for listening. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The State Corporation Commission's Division of Energy Regulation regulates investor-owned electric, gas, and water and sewer utilities and electric cooperatives. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when we speak with division officials about how they resolve consumer complaints with these utilities. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.